and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by the Pearland Economic Corporation and Texas Citizens Bank. Today, my guest for the show is Richard Saleen, co-founder at Resilience Innovation Hub, which is based in Houston. Richard and I will discuss how Winter Storm Uri's devastation is an opportunity to drive collaboration and innovation in resiliency, just like Hurricane Harvey and COVID-19 have both done. Richard, thank you so much for joining me today.
Great, thank you. Hopefully everybody is okay, and your family and friends and within the Innovation Map, you know, world after last week. I'm sure people are.
Yeah, I think
have a new Monday.
Yeah, it was an interesting week, and that's obviously what I'm having you on the podcast to discuss today. Everything that happened last week is exactly what you're working on at the Resilience Innovation Hub. But before we get to talking about last week, I just want to give you a chance to introduce yourself and the Resilience Innovation Hub to people who might not know about the hub. It's relatively new, but the work you're doing falls right in line with resilience and coming back from something like last week. So tell us a little bit, give us the 101 on Resilience Innovation Hub.
Well, as a fourth generation Houstonian, it's just so hard to see my hometown, you know, get hit persistently with a lot of these weather and other types of disasters. Sad but true, we're not the only, you know, city and community, not just across Texas, but across the country that, you know, has to go through all of this. What drove the formation of the Resilience Innovation Hub was the partnership with the Insurance Information Institute, which is the think tank of the national and global insurance and reinsurance companies, everything from USAA and AAA California to Munich Re and Swiss Re, USI, which has got some operations here. Their concern, which is pretty obvious now, when you have lost $1 trillion on the U.S. Gulf Coast over the past 7 years from hurricanes and floods, you got to start doing something different. And that different means either penalizing, which is raising rates or even leaving markets, or incentivizing, which is coming up with new policies, and when I say policies, it's an actual insurance product, right? And investing differently, but also incentivizing their policyholders. So, you know, the example I give is when I got a new car, I called GEICO up. That's who we use for automotive insurance. And, you know, they asked me a lot of questions about, you know, what do I have? Do I have a rear view, you know, camera? Do I have anti-lock brakes? Well, all of those, I get an incentive. That is where the industry is going. So our focus on resilience, Natalie, is pre-disaster risk mitigation. What can you do to invest? What can you put on, inside, around a building, a facility, your car, that will protect the value of that asset, that facility in the operations, reduce future losses, right? And ultimately change the economics of a community. So that's, you know, where that began to make this connection that we needed to find ways to, quote unquote, unleash innovation. And right. Unleashing innovation, right, is through entrepreneurship, inventors, innovators, and a whole set of new types of investors.
I think the interesting dynamic that it has emerged and that you've created really is that there are a lot of really incredible technology solutions that can prevent things like water damage to your car and to your home that we saw from Harvey. And we're going to talk more about that. But the conversation now is about, well, these technologies are beginning to exist, but how do we make sure people use them? And that's making that conversation, opening that conversation, that door to conversation with the insurance companies. Because yeah, it's incredible to see that relationship change rather than, oh, I have to file an insurance claim. It's after the fact, and I have to deal with that. It's, well, let's start that conversation early. So yeah, so, and interesting, because we have talked a lot about Harvey, but now we have a whole different type of storm to worry about in Houston, and that's a winter storm. That winter storm Uri brought to Houston and all of and Texas, and no one knew how to deal. And of course, I laugh now, but it's not funny at all. But all of these complications that came from that winter storm, what failed us? What went wrong? And, you know, how do we start opening the door to new innovations to prevent it from happening again?
Well, let me play off two things that you said. So first off, we are not just as Greater Houston and the state and the nation, but we're just whipsawed, right? I mean, we've gone from back-to-back storms and hurricanes to COVID, and now, you know, snow and ice and its impact on energy. I mean, people are just exhausted. And I think in that exhaustion, there's obviously emotional and societal impacts. And hopefully people are reaching out to get support for what they need personally. But with that, exhaustion then becomes frustration and anger, you know, the whole piece of it. I think, frankly, the anger and frustration is now driving the pounding on the table to say, look, we got to stop doing what we've been doing. And what we've been doing is not investing in either our infrastructure or ways to make us resilient, right? Everybody knows, so this is, you know, not going to be a surprise to your listeners, Natalie, but 10 plus years ago, there was a report that was issued right after the last big ice and some snow that we got, not as extensive as this, that pretty much told ERCOT, the Electrical Reliability Council of Texas, which means that we have in Texas our own power and energy grid exclusive to us, to the 49 other states around us. And they pretty much said, if unless you invest in this and with weatherizing and doing all that type of stuff, whatever happens next or worse is going to be damaging. Mm-hmm. There's 254 counties in the state of Texas. Not one county was immune from what just happened, right? Houston, unfortunately, got hit partly because we're such a large urbanized city. But we got hit along with 254 other counties and cities. So that frustration and anger could go one of two paths, in the path that you, Natalie, and I, you know, and others in the innovation map, the ecosystem, hope is that this will once and for all recognize that we cannot do the traditional things, mm-hmm. and that we need to look at how the world has responded, other places, and that we actually have technology, innovation, and frankly, we have more capital ever to invest, more capital than we've ever had to invest. So let me use an example. It will come out, I don't remember the exact price tag. I want to say it's somewhere around $20,000 plus. But the cone, you know, where the on the windmills, I'll just call them windmills, okay? Yeah. All right. The cone that's in the middle, okay, that could be heated, all right? There was no incentive. There was nothing that encouraged the private sector market owners of that to make that step, okay? Mm-hmm. There's a number of other ways to, quote unquote, weatherize, okay? And frankly, Natalie, since last week, I've gotten phone calls from around the world of people who actually have very, very solid, not some nascent idea or some concept, but some great solutions to do that. We've had these tools, and we're going to have more tools in our toolkit to do this.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's the tools exist, of course. We have many neighbors to the north that deal with these weather conditions on a regular basis, like even setting aside the specific grid challenges Texas has. But factoring it in, you know, the technologies, the ideas, they're there. What is that incentive? How does that conversation now start with policymakers, major energy companies, to to make that happen, because like you said, it wasn't new information that our grid wasn't ready to take on something like this, but there was no reason to upgrade it until now, of course, after the fact, right? So what's the movement that can make those changes?
Well, so let me caveat that okay. I do not speak for the insurance and reinsurance companies, okay? However, in a lot of conversations I've had over the past 2 years, like I said, when you've had $1 trillion of losses on the U.S. Gulf Coast, then you add what's going on in Florida all the way up to the central, Midwest to California. I mean, after a while, they're going to change the way things are going to be insured and reinsured, mm-hmm. right? And Natalie, you and I can be insured on anything. Just how much do we want to pay for the coverage mm-hmm. changes the dynamic, right? So one of the challenges that I think has been underway, and this may help accelerate it, is how do I encourage my policyholders to invest in certain things like, let me use an example from Hurricane Harvey, okay? The water's rising in your house, and the closer it gets to an electrical socket, if the power's still on your house, it gets in the electrical socket, and it sparks out your house mm-hmm. in certain cases, okay? Wouldn't it be great if there was something you could plug into one of those sockets or something around your house as the moisture content increased and it picked up the moisture, mm-hmm. that it actually turned off the power in your house? That exists. There are products that do that, okay? Well, what happens if you have something that deals with that there is a change in temperature or a change in something that pretty much says, I'm going to turn off the water in my house, okay? I'm going to shut off the water. That's possible, okay? So what we know is that these disasters all have kind of common areas mm-hmm. to work on, residential, automotive, commercial, industrial, and the public sector. So what's holding us back, Natalie? You're being kind of diplomatic, and I'm probably not, all right? What's holding us back is, we need P3s, private, philanthropic, public partnerships. And we need to get government to recognize that entrepreneurs and innovators and investors are no longer just cute parts of our economy, that if we could change procurement and contracting, if we could actually find ways to have them at the table, mm-hmm. in these discussions about what are the next steps, I think that we could transform not just Houston, but transform, we could be a transformational community nationwide.
Yeah. And you bring up innovations that come out of Harvey, for instance, and I want to talk to you a little bit more specifically about that to kind of move away from the almost depressing state that, we're in following this winter storm, and talk about some actual movement that happened from Harvey. A silver lining was that you had all of these really innovative solutions come out of that horrible storm and flooding. So what did you see? What sort of technologies did you see come out of Harvey? Because I think that's almost inspirational to see that, yeah, we can have this catastrophic storm, but you actually get good innovations coming out of it.
So the first big bucket is data science, predictive analytics, that whole big bucket that we've got a lot of data. We've got access to a lot of data, more than we ever, have, and every day it just quadruples or whatever the number may be. What we have, what we are missing is we are drowning in data and hungry for intelligence, mm-hmm. actionable intelligence. So what have innovators and entrepreneurs in Greater Houston and other places done is there's a lot more data tools that take abundant amount of information and find ways to present it in easy form to help make decisions, right? So mm-hmm. whether it's something on your phone that gives you not just an alert, but drives you to take an action, or something that ties into a facility or operations that says, look, you may not be aware, but you've got a problem and here's a big red flag and you need to go take care of this before it gets worse. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think Hurricane Harvey and those subsequent storms and floods really has opened a significant opportunity for data science, predictive analytics, artificial intelligence, and something that I need to keep on reminding folks, blockchain. For whatever reasons, some of my friends who are regulators and elected and appointed officials keep on equating blockchain to cryptocurrency and to their fear about that. Well, blockchain, the biggest distribution and use of blockchain, Natalie, is driven by the United Nations and social impact foundations. Because what are they doing? They're tracking billions of dollars of money that's gone around the world to help build new infrastructure and help, you know, third world countries, you know, advance. And they want to make sure, A, the money is getting to who it's supposed to get to, and B, that the projects actually are getting built. And then third, what's the performance? Is it actually making a change? All right. Well, there's a big blockchain, you know, group here in Houston. All right. So we've got one of the challenges I find is we've got, and this is not a negative, it's a challenge. All right. We've got a whole group of working on blockchain. We've got another group that's doing data science and predictive analytics. We've got another group doing green and sustainability. We've got another group doing smart cities, right? And we're blessed in Greater Houston of having so many smart people, but we're also, Natalie, cursed that we have so many people working on these things when in reality, what investors, the insurance companies, and others are looking for are integrated platforms, bringing them all together. And that is a part of what we hope this innovation hub in our network across the country can help do, is bring these pieces together. So what came out of Hurricane Harvey, number one, was data science, predictive analytics, that bucket. The second is people, you know, Rahel, with ClimateGuard, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep on telling Rahel, and it's like getting a Ziploc bag. It just happens to be a very large Ziploc bag for my car. Why did that happen? She lost her car. She saw a lot of other people lose their car. 500,000 cars were declared either, you know, lost or needed to be repaired. That's a lot of cars, all right? And so, you know, here's somebody who had a personal scenario that she converted into an opportunity in a product. Now, by the way, we are still hoping and praying that our friends in the automotive industry, meaning all of our friends that have car dealerships in Greater Houston, would actually work with Rahel and us and work with AAA or USAA or State Farm to put one of these kits in the back of their trunk.
Support for this podcast comes from Pearland's Lower Kirby District, located at 288 and Beltway 8, a 1,200-acre mixed-use district offering a premier business location with access to Pearland's diverse educated workforce. Learn more about the smart pro-business address at lowerkirby.com. Support also comes from Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today.
I love that everybody right now is picturing a big Ziploc bag with a car in it, but that's exactly what it is. It's ClimateGuard, and we've covered it on Innovation Map. It's literally put your car in a bag. You lay it out and you drive in it, you zip it up, and it protects from the elements. And that's something that came out of, just like you said, Rahel, who lost her car during Harvey. So many things like that.
So that example, right? Yeah. I kind of call that as the practical innovation, right? It's kind of like a no-brainer. You're sitting there kind of going, okay, I got this problem, I got this challenge, I got to protect my asset in some way, mm-hmm. and here I'm going to go, you know, come up with that. I call that kind of the practical innovation. It's kind of like one of these things where you slap your head and kind of go, God, why didn't I think of that, right?
And it goes back to that conversation too that we were having earlier that, you know, this is a great consumer-facing device, but why not incentivize it from the insurance perspective? You buy a ClimateGuard bag, you put your car in it during major weather events, and you get a discount on your insurance every month because you own that and you use it. And that's that conversation that you're facilitating now.
Yeah. But so I describe innovation in having done this a number of times in other sectors, biotech and IT and stuff. So always the challenge for innovators and innovation is getting a decision maker to feel comfortable in making a decision to pivot from what they know and they're comfortable with to what they don't know and they're not comfortable, right? When I worked at MD Anderson Cancer Center, trust me, you know, that's life and death decisions, but there still was a pushback on some of the things that are now pretty much a given, okay? So innovation always has a challenge by people who may not get the vision, may not want to get the vision for lots of reasons, but I think it just comes down to the economics. And so what one of the day in and day out tasks that all of us have to do as in, you know, working on innovation now is there are, 30 some odd plus car dealerships in the great, I'm not talking about sites, different types of car dealerships in the 11, 12 counties around greater Houston, Harris County. All right. There's probably more than that. Right. This is actually, to me, a no-brainer. So when you go to finance either the lease or the purchase of the car, what does it take for $399 to be added to the car to what I'm going to either finance, all right, put into my lease, and to get AAA or, you know what it is? It's literally getting the owner of the dealership, their finance department, folks like Rahel and a couple of the insurance folks to sit down and say, you know what, let's go pilot this. Let's go prove that this can work. That's what typically innovation usually requires, is some initial demonstration or pilot so that those who are more traditional feel comfortable that they are not going to be penalized for making a new decision. Am I making some sense?
Yeah. And it sounds so simple. It hasn't happened before. And it makes complete sense that we should get all major parties to the table to discuss solutions, but it hasn't happened. And it doesn't happen until we need it. Right. So.
Yeah. And it's something that a lot of people have talked about, you know, and you've covered this a little bit. I don't know the current size of the city of Houston's fleet. They have a bunch of cars, trucks. Okay. Same thing for Harris County. All right. Give us 10% of the fleet and let's try this out. Mm-hmm. Because by the way, during Hurricane Harvey, the city and the county lost a lot of vehicles just as the, you know, average citizen lost vehicles. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are ways for public and private. The public infrastructure in both the city and the counties around us could be the best opportunities to do these kinds of demonstration and pilots at low risk. And then you bring the insurance guys in who actually help reduce the risk. It to me, like you said, Natalie, it's a no-brainer, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So, all right, so we're on my last one I'll give you. Okay, so we talked about data. We talked about practical kind of ideas, you know. And then the third is this idea of integrating, right? So there's been a long conversation, you know, since the drought, right, which mm-hmm. was now 10 years ago, right, something like that. We, you know, the state went through a major drought, which was as bad as the one in California. Suddenly, for the first time, there were places in the state that ran out of water. Again, this isn't the first time, by the way, Natalie, that we've had to figure out what to do with water when we didn't have it, okay, or we couldn't drink it, mm-hmm. right? So the drought began to get innovators and scientists and entrepreneurs together and start, okay, well, what can I do to generate more water, okay? What can I do to, you know, create a reserve supply? Well, then we also figured out that it takes a lot of water to produce a lot of energy to keep power systems going, keep our, you know, keep the NRGs and the plants and the center points and all going. And so all of a sudden folks started talking about the energy water nexus, mm-hmm. which essentially says we use a lot of water to create energy. We need a lot of energy to create water. They're common and interest, right? So what's emerged over the past 10 plus years, both from the drought, from green and sustainability, is the connection between energy and water. And then the third component is that both of those produce a lot of data. So we have a lot of sensors and meters, which goes into this idea of connecting around smart cities, smart water, smart energy, whatever it is we want to call smart. But it's all, Natalie, around integrated solutions. Mm-hmm. And therefore, one of the things that I think emerged but hasn't completely advanced as fast as I thought it would is this idea of integrated technology platforms around energy, water, and data.
Thanks for outlining those buckets that you're focusing on now. One thing I keep thinking about too is the fact that as awful and devastating as Harvey was, we had Harvey going on its own. We didn't also have a pandemic like we did last week with the winter storm. So I do want to talk to you about COVID-19. I know it's not your traditional thing you think about when you think about resiliency, but it has affected public health across the world. So what sort of opportunities for innovation are coming out of this pandemic from where you're sitting?
So, you know, we started from a focus on water and weather related. Mm-hmm. We haven't lost that focus, but because more and more of the insurance and reinsurance and alternative investors and all, you know, COVID hit everybody, right. In a way where it didn't make a difference what kind of business, you know, you had. But one of the reminders, and I don't mean to chuckle at this, but it's just one more reminder of previous lessons learned. What happened during Hurricane Harvey that we have to remember is that we lost our supply chains in a lot of ways. Right. If it wasn't for, I keep on saying this, and I may be damned for saying it, but if it wasn't for HEB, Anheuser-Busch, and Silver Eagle Distributors here in Houston, who delivered more water to the citizens of the Gulf Coast and the areas around Houston and Beaumont, Port Arthur, if it wasn't for HEB, Silver Eagle, and Anheuser-Busch, we would have been in a serious challenge because the federal government still could not deliver all the water that they thought they could deliver. Proof positive, end of point. However, what it proved out was that our supply chains to get whatever we need as a result of whether it's a fire, a spill, or a leak, or an explosion like Houston. Got to remember, Natalie, there was an explosion a year ago in Northwest Houston. Got to remember that we had three explosions and fires and leaks on the Houston Ship Channel, right? So COVID only reminded us one more time that our supply chains are a critical part of how we create resiliency. You know, we couldn't find masks, couldn't find gloves, weren't sure, you know, where anything was. And then we went into this fiasco about what do we need to do to deliver vaccines? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I always kind of think of things. I'm kind of a visual person, Natalie. Again, three buckets. Okay. Supply chains, number one. So there's a whole set of people. Remember we talked about blockchain and all. There's a whole set of people that actually know how to get our supply chains working more efficiently and effectively. Okay. Then the second is what do we need to do to create product very quickly? Well, that's where you saw all of the 3D printing suddenly emerge, right? During COVID, making masks, you know, thank God for Tito's. Okay. You know, I have to say, Natalie, Tito's hand sanitizer and a little lemon can get you through a tough day. He says, joking. Okay. Right. But so we had people who aren't kind of figured out how to pivot and use 3D, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're in the third stage of COVID, which is about how do we reopen? And not only how do we reopen, but how do we give building owners and operators, people who are leasing space, their employees, how do we give people confidence that they're going to go back to work and not suddenly come into whatever the next wave is of COVID? So there's a company called Zenex, X-E-N-E-X. They're out of San Antonio. They've got some ties and some investors here in Houston. It's a robot that does UV, and originally it was designed to go in and kill off staph infections in emergency rooms and surgical suites. Well, what do? They pivoted. They figured out how to kill COVID. Okay. So COVID taught us one more time everything that we had previously learned, and that is we need to fix our supply chains, have more localized supply chains to support. Second of all, that we actually can come up with new products and develop products on the fly. And then third, what do we need to be doing to reopen America and reopen Texas? And that's never going to, by the way, COVID-19 checkmark, that's only the first of several waves of what are already being said to be a series of pandemics that we may be facing in the future.
Yeah, I know. And to go back to the comparison, I don't think I'm alone in thinking this, but it was so bizarre. The early days of COVID now, almost a full year ago, feeling very, like having it feel very familiar to Harvey. And it's like, how in the world? And it's exactly how you explained it. You know, how does this devastating hurricane and flood compared to a global pandemic? I don't know, but it felt similar. And it's because there's some of the same mechanics of lost supply chain and people just not knowing how to deal. And it's weird, but it's similar. And I think I'm not alone in that comparison. It very quickly felt way, way more than Harvey, of course, being, you know, a shorter time and very different solutions. But I felt it.
Right. And look, the other sad truth is, okay, we kind of knew that there was a horizon after Hurricane Harvey that we would all be able to get out and reconnect with each other. I mean, people were reconnecting within an hour, right? And I'll come back to another lesson learned from Harvey that now has continued to play out. But, you know, this quarantine, I mean, it's isolated people where you have a lot of time to think about, you know. And again, I kind of am encouraged that there are some people that sit in the quarantine and worry and appropriately get, you know, bottled up. But at the same time, there's a whole set of people that are sitting in quarantine and coming up with solutions. And it's pretty interesting. Look, one of the things that, that you and I have talked about that I failed to mention came out of Harvey. Are folks like Ryan, Alexander Thomas and Humanity, and Niall Dixon and the Food Pantry bot, okay, texting. I've been on the phone, Natalie, since you know the article came out last week. I've been on the phone with 11 different entities around the world that have these, what I call platforms to help kind of regain community, connect communities, which gets me to that the greatest result of Hurricane Harvey that still exists, and I can no longer apologize for describing it, but the Get Shit Done, the GSD network. That, so take a look at Crowdsource Rescue, take a look at what Humanity, take a look at what GotSpot, Rescue Spot. The bottom line is, one of the things that I think is an exemplar of not just Houston's community drive and philanthropy is that this is a community, and there are others across the country where there are these get shit done networks that just are not going to wait for somebody's permission. They don't expect government to actually come in and do things at the pace that's required. So that philosophy, that impetus to do, to get something done, is probably the number one gift of Hurricane Harvey. And that group, that network, and others have stepped up and continue to step up in the past week, Natalie, making sure that people have food, that people that were freezing and, God forbid, almost died in retirement centers and homes and all, that there was somebody that could connect them and take care of them.
I think, you know, I know so many people describe Houston as a resilient city, and it's so exciting to be from a place where we have so many people who do rise to the occasion. I always equate it too with like, well, we're kind of a beat up city too by all of these things that we're having to overcome. But yeah, it's incredible to see in the wake of something like Harvey or the storm, winter storm, you have people that rise to the occasion that to lend a helping hand, of course. And I think, you know, as Houstonians, both of us and the rest of the city are tired of this cycle of major weather event and then recovery. And at this point, it almost feels like the punches are coming back to back to back to back. So is that what you're observing? And is the way to break the cycle? And if there's not, what's the way to prevent it from being so devastating?
Well, let me pick up on our last part of a conversation and bridge to what you just asked me. I don't know if you've heard about this thing, Natalie, called Clubhouse. You know, it's kind of getting a little bit of attention lately.
I've not ever hung out in a clubhouse yet, but I have heard about it. I understand the concept, but yeah.
Well, I was on a fundraiser last night for Texas with a bunch of hip hop artists that even at 62, I know a few of their names. Okay. But there was a fundraiser for Texas. All right. Called Clubhouse Loves Texas. I think they ended up raising about $50,000 or $60,000. Wow. Now, that may not be a lot, but what it did do was it got a lot of people's attention. There was a lot of interesting conversation between kind of the performances and all. Why am I saying that as an example is that, again, no one in this generation of folks, and I'm calling generation not by age, but people who have been impacted by these disasters, one after another, like you said, you could get really exhausted, you get very frustrated, which is appropriate, or you could get off your duff and go do something. And the doers are the ones that are transforming not just Houston, but, you know, the country and the world on this. All right, can you change? Look, we can't talk about climate change in Texas, Natalie. I'm sorry. I can't, you know, and I can't talk. Right. The fact of the matter is, let's not label this. Let's get to the fact that there is something persistently happening. Right. By the way, Natalie, a week ago Monday was President's Day. You don't want to be in Texas on a holiday weekend. We seem to be able to have hurricanes, floods, fires, disasters, you know, the Memorial Day, Tax Day, Halloween. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, okay, I think one of the best solutions to all of this, Natalie, is to cancel all the holidays. It may be the best thing that we do.
It's the worst punishment. You think you have the day off and then nope. Massive.
I'm going to work. I don't care what the holiday is. I'm going to work because if it means there's a chance that this is going to, you know, attract a disaster. But look, we know that something's going on. We know that hurricanes, that we have these tropical storms that are kind of, you know, it's a tropical storm that's worth watching, that then suddenly 12 hours later has become, you know, a hurricane 3 or 4 or 5. So we know that something's happening, right? I think the business community and I think the civic community is realizing that the cost of all of these disasters is too much. It's too much for their own businesses and their own bottom lines. It's too much for their employees. And frankly, unless we get our arms around this stuff, Natalie, meaning opening up and unleashing innovation, that's all my focus is: pre-disaster risk mitigation, investment, unleashing innovation. All right. It will be difficult to recruit top talent to Houston. And yeah. I know for a fact that several of the major hospital and research institutes down the street here at the Texas Medical Center after Hurricane Harvey had a very, very difficult time recruiting top talent here. I also know that, sad but true, again, every time there is a flood or something, we get a lot of national, international attention. Mm-hmm. We need to flip it on its head. We need to tell the world, you know how to be resilient. You know how to innovate, whether it's snow, ice, energy, floods, spills, leaks, whatever. That has been my hope as a fourth generation Houstonian, working with national and international networks. And the flagship of the Innovation Hub is here in Houston, tied to Boston and Florida and New Orleans and other places. But I think that it's time that we flip this on its head and say to the world, we got it. We know. But the flip side of this is that because we know these challenges, we are opening the door to the best ideas to be piloted and demonstrated. And all I ask, and I know for a fact that a lot of folks have said the same thing to me, we have got to get elected and appointed officials on the idea of we are open to ideas, new solutions, may not have been tested here in our own backyard, but it's been proven out in other places of the world. That's how innovation occurs.
I think you're absolutely right. And I guess to kind of, you know, wrap up everything we've discussed, what is, I know there's so many players in this system. You have all of the P's, which you mentioned, but what are our marching duties, I guess, you know, from corporates to startups and innovators to, you know, policymakers and insurance companies, what should each party be focused on?
Well, let me say, and this is literally evolving by the hour. As a matter of fact, while we've been on the phone talking and doing this interview, I've gotten 10, 11 texts on this. Working with the Insurance Information Institute, working with what's called the Insurance Council of Texas, that's the Texas group, looking at civic and business organizations, we believe now is the time to once and for all bring all the parties to the table. Not do another after action report, not do another post-mortem. We know what happened. We've known what's happened. So the marching orders, I'm not sure, I'm not in the business of giving orders. I'm just encouraging that now is the time to actually change how we procure, contract, and invest in alternative mitigation, ways to do things. And the best way to do that is, once and for all, is to have the public sector stop believing that they are the only part of the equation, or as FEMA's leadership said and has said over and over again during the town halls and things that we've hosted, FEMA and the government should not be 911, and they cannot be the first or last result. Resort. So I think our hope is, coming out of what you graciously, Natalie, given us a chance to write about, talk about, and I think hopefully this will not be the last time that we talk about this, but I want to see Houston adopt a strategy through procurement, contracting, pilots, demonstrations, but to effectively say with the insurance industry, we want to be the place that develops a new kind of resilience. Mm-hmm. It will be driven by financial and economic modeling. Okay, there's a way to show, as I mentioned, Wharton, Columbia, NYU, we're trying to get Rice brought into the fold on this. We now know that there is a 1-4 return on the investment for pre-disaster risk mitigation. That is a damn good return on the investment. So with your help and assistance, I am hoping that our next conversation is about how to really invest in these new technologies, how to bring them to be organized in Houston as a national or global center of excellence on this. And frankly, how to tell the insurance industry, we are here to help mitigate future losses. But Natalie, the last part that I'll end on, and I promise I'll get off of my soapbox, it is hell being poor. That's an obvious statement. It's really hell being poor and going through back-to-back disasters. And that is one reason why we've been targeting how to address low to moderate income neighborhoods, and why you will be hearing some very specific actions to help invest, help bring technology, and help cover the insurance cost for low and moderate income neighborhoods.
Absolutely. I look forward to hearing more on that for sure. And yeah, hopefully our next conversation isn't in response to something, and it's more of a movement toward some innovation in this space ahead of time, and less reactionary, more precautionary, more mitigation. But thank you so much for joining me today. I know getting you on the show last minute after such a wild week, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you, Natalie. Thank you to everybody at Innovation Map. And we're ready to collaborate and partner.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition. And check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.